I'd like for us all to open our Bibles again to 1 Chronicles chapter 18. Now, we were looking at the parallel as we wrapped up yesterday in 2 Samuel chapter 8, but I've decided I would prefer to use the 1 Chronicles account because it has some explanations here and there and probably a better record of numbers that occurs in this section. Now, what is this? This is a small catalog of David's military victories once he was established in Jerusalem as his new capital. And his desire is, I think, to make sure that his borders are fully secure. So the first group that he deals with is the one that's caused trouble ever since he was a kid. And that would be the Philistines over on the southwest side of United Israel. So 1 Chronicles chapter 18 says, "After this, David defeated the Philistines and subdued them. And he took Gath and its villages out of the hand of the Philistines." Now, what we were looking at yesterday talked about he took Metheg Ammah out of the hand of the Philistines. And I said that that was probably one of the cities. Well, more than likely, it was Gath. Metheg Ammah has something to do with the mother bridle. So it may be that Gath was controlling the area closest to Israel. So David took control of it. So that's got his southwest border secured. Then verse 2, he defeated Moab, and the Moabs became servants of David and brought tribute. Now, for some reason, it would appear the Moabites did a sneak attack against Israel. And because of this, David takes great measures of retribution against them. That was what the 2 Samuel 8:2 said. He basically took those that had attacked, and he executed two-thirds of them and let the other third go, and that final third paid tribute every year to David. So that means he now has his southeast border secured. So his southern border is pretty much secured. And that takes us up to the north. Verse 3 of our 1 Chronicles 18. David also defeated Hadadezer, king of Zobah Hamat, as he went to set up his monument at the river Euphrates. Now, this Zobah Hamat is probably a small kingdom immediately north of Damascus, south of Hamat, which we're going to talk about as another kingdom in a little bit. It's the modern Syrian city of Hama. And it's this Zobah Hamat is also inland from Beirut. So it's somewhere in the general vicinity of Baalbek, if you are interested in looking for it on a map. It has not left much of a mark, perhaps because David put it down in this time period. So Hadadezer, the king of this small kingdom, had apparently been causing trouble to his north and had even pushed as far as the river Euphrates and set up a little marker there that he was the big guy, right? Verse number 4, David took from him 1,000 chariots, 7,000 horsemen, and 20,000 foot soldiers. Now, those numbers seem to be the better numbers compared to the ones in 2 Samuel 8. And this is a scribal issue. It's not got anything to do with the inspired text. The original documents were produced with the assistance of God's Holy Spirit. But they have been hand-copied repeatedly over and over and over and over again for years and years and years until the printing press finally came along. And then it made it a little bit easier to copy from one edition to the next. But two things are really hard to do properly in hand copying, and that is proper nouns, especially the spelling of those proper nouns, and numbers. So that's why we see kind of varying numbers between Samuel and the Chronicles. But this one, I think, properly represents how many of the military forces of the Zobah kingdom David took. Now, he's not supposed to keep horses. So what does he do? David hamstrung all the chariot horses, and that would have been great if it just stopped there, because then those horses can be used for work in the fields or transport. When you hamstring the chariot horse, just cut one of its Achilles tendons, you stop it from being used as a high-speed engine for a chariot. So David doesn't keep horses because God says not to have chariots. But look at the rest of the verse. He left enough for 100 chariots. So he kept a 10% chariot force of the one that he captured. Now, what does he keep it for? It might just simply be for show, to use in military parades, things of that nature. But it's also possible he'd kept it around to be used as a rapid response force, which again, we see these little places where David fudges on what God has told him should be the case, like kings should not multiply horses and chariots to themselves, and kings should not multiply wives to themselves. And we've now seen him do both of those things. Verse number 5. When the Syrians of Damascus came to help Hadadezer, king of Zobah, David struck down 22,000 men of the Syrians. So the Syrians of Damascus, to the south of this Zobah kingdom, are apparently acting as allies. And so because they've been hit and defeated by David, the Damascus military responds, and David defeats them as well. And then, verse 6, David put garrisons in Syria, in Damascus, and the Syrians became servants to David and brought tribute. And he who is gave victory to David wherever he went. And David took the shields of gold that were carried by the servants of Hadadezer and brought them to Jerusalem. And from Tibhath and from Kun, cities of Hadadezer, David took a large amount of bronze. With it, Solomon made the bronze sea and the pillars and the vessels of bronze. So that's a little historical connection to the building of the temple later. Now remember, we're looking at a time period roughly the end of the first decade into the beginning of the second decade of David. The temple will not be built until the fourth year of Solomon. And that's after David's been on the throne for 40 years. So we're quite a few years into the future when the writer of 1 Chronicles tells us that the materials that David captured on this military expedition to the north were stored away and then utilized in Solomon's kingdom. So all of that is taken care of. So effectively, David has now secured his northern border. Verse number 9, he gets himself another ally. When two, and it's possible there's a slight different pronunciation of the vowel here, because in 2 Samuel, it's represented as toy. So whoever it is, this T name, king of Hamat, and that's the modern Syrian city of Hama. So Hamat is an independent kingdom north of the kingdom of Zobah that David just defeated. So when Tou, king of Hamat, or Hamat, heard that David had defeated the whole army of Hadadezer, king of Zobah, he sent his son Hadoram to King David to ask about his health and to bless him because he had fought against Hadadezer and defeated him. For Hadadezer had often been at war with Tou. And so he sent all sorts of articles of gold, of silver, and of bronze. So Tou is thankful to David for taking down a kingdom that's been hassling him. And so this makes Tou an ally, an appreciative ally of David. And he starts sending him all sorts of tribute. And verse 11, these also King David dedicated to He Who Is, together with the silver and the gold that he carried off from all the nations, from Edom, Moab, the Ammonites, which we had not really heard about yet, the Philistines, and Amalek, which we had heard about them. So pretty much every bit of precious metal that David puts his hands on is going to be stored away for eventual use in the building of the temple, because that's on his mind for the remainder of his kingdom. God said that he couldn't build it personally, but he can contribute to it. Verse number 12. Abishai, remember that's son number 2 of David's oldest sister, Zeruiah. Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, killed 18,000 Edomites in the Valley of Salt. And so that's down in the Dead Sea. Edom is on the southeast corner of the Dead Sea. So that's apparently where the fight took place, is right there on the southeast corner of the Dead Sea. Then he put garrisons in Edom, and all the Edomites became David's servants, and He Who Is gave victory to David wherever he went. So David has now secured all of his borders. His western border is the Mediterranean. His northwestern border is Phoenicia, and he has good relationships with the king of Tyre, the king of Sidon, maybe even as far up as Beirut. He has an alliance with the king of Hamat. He's taken over the kingdom of Zobah, and he's also taken over Damascus and put it under his control. So his northern territory is all secured, and he has either alliances or occupation all the way up to the Euphrates River. So the kingdom of David goes quite far north. And then on his eastern side, he's taken action against the Ammonites. That was recorded here. And then beyond the Ammonites, that's the open desert of the Arabian Peninsula, what's sometimes referred to as the empty place. So that border is secure off to the east. And then on his southeast, he has Moab under his control, and now he has Edom under his control. And so that's all secured on that side. His southern border goes down into the Sinai Desert. So that's secure just because of that. The Amalekites had been down there, but he's taking care of them pretty much. They're under his control. And then off to the southwest had been the Philistines, who are now under his control. And then beyond the Philistines is Egypt. So David has ringed himself with security, and things are looking good, and the Davidic kingdom is spreading beyond the boundaries of what was originally the promised land. 1 Chronicles 18:14. So David reigned over all Israel. He administered justice and equity to all his people. So this is his good years. This is when he's doing things right. Verse 15, and Joab, the son of Zeruiah, was over the army. The reason he got that job is because he's the one that took a few men through the water tunnel and captured Jerusalem intact. The promise David had made was whoever does that gets to be the commander of the Israeli armies. Joab did it, so he is. Jehoshaphat, the son of Ahilud, was recorder, so he's keeping records of everything. He may have contributed, possibly, to this book right here. Zadok, the son of Ahitub, and Ahimelech, the son of Abiathar, were priests. And it seems to me that Zadok is likely taking care of things at the tabernacle, while Ahimelech is taking care of things at Jerusalem, where the Ark of the Covenant is located. And Shavsha was secretary, another administrative position, perhaps contributing to some of the material we're looking at right now. Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, was over the Kirathites and the Pelethites. Now, these are two specialty units for David's army, and I'll talk about them on future occasions as well. Kirathite is built off of a word that has to do with swearing a blood oath. So the Kirathites are probably David's personal sworn bodyguard. The Pelethites is built off of a word that has to do with running fast. So this is probably the courier corps. This is the message unit with a lot of fast runners that can take messages here, there, and everywhere. And then David's sons were the chief officials in the service of the king. Now at this point, they are fairly young, but they are learning what it is to serve in the kingdom so that eventually they will be members of David's staff and will be charged with going and taking care of different places of business within the kingdom itself. At this point, we're going to go to the book of Psalms and pick up some of the psalms that may have been written right around this time in David's kingdom. The first one that I want us to go to is definitely from this time period because it has a superscription that's attached to it that is related to what we've just been reading. It's Psalm number 60. Psalm number 60, the superheading says, "To the choirmaster, according to Shushan Eduth, a mictum of David for instruction." So all of that is just to help the musical directors know how this is to be presented, on what type of instruments, and the feeling, the flow of the music, maybe even the tune that is to be used. But here's the historical tie-in. When he strove with Aram Naharaim and with Aram Zobah, and when Joab on his return struck down 12,000 of Edom in the Valley of Salt. So that's what we were just reading about a little while ago. There is a parallel out of this psalm found in Psalm 108, by the way. So Psalm 60, verse 1. O God, you have rejected us, broken our defenses. You've been angry, O restore us. You have made the land to quake. You've torn it open. Repair its breaches, for it totters. You have made your people see hard things. You've given us wine to drink that made us stagger. You have set up a banner for those who fear you, that they may flee to it from the bow. Selah. That your beloved ones may be delivered. Give salvation by your right hand and answer us. So there's a kind of a hint here, it seems to me, that something was going on during this period of time where God allowed the Edomites and apparently also the Moabites do a sneak attack against Israel. And they suffered because of this. And there might have even been some literal earthquakes that went along with this that made the people realize we have done something wrong. We have not been living according to the covenant. God has not been that wall for us against our enemies because we're not being his people. And so David writes this psalm talking about that and how God still sets up this banner to which you can flee and repent and be delivered and be saved. And so David, after this has happened, that is, they've repented and acted accordingly, David goes against both the Moabites and against the Edomites. Joab seems to be the one that did the action against the Edomites, and they take vengeance upon them for the sneak attack. Verse number 6, God has spoken in his holiness. With exaltation, I will divide up Shechem and give out the vale of Sukkot. Now, Shechem is on the east side of the Jordan Valley, and Sukkot is on the, Shechem is on the west side of the Jordan Valley, and Sukkot is on the east side, right in the same general vicinity, about halfway between the Sea of Galilee to the north and the Dead Sea or the Salt Sea in the south. So something must have been going on in that general vicinity. That might have been where the fighting was happening. Verse 7, Gilead is mine, Manasseh is mine. Gilead is part of the eastern territories, and some of Manasseh is also in the east. Ephraim is my helmet, Judah is my scepter. So those are on the west side of the Jordan. And then Moab is my wash basin. Upon Edom, I cast my shoe. Over Philistia, I shout in triumph. So here we have God speaking out that during apparently this fighting, during this little war that involved Moab and Edom and Philistia, God uses his people to defeat Moab, making it nothing more than a dishpan. And he slaps around on Edom with the shoe, which we know that's kind of a Middle Eastern thing to show contempt for someone else, that they're under your foot. You basically slap at them with your shoe. So here is God saying that he slapped at Edom with his shoe. And then Philistia, they lose out, and God shouts over them in triumph. So I think this is related to at least some of the fighting, the military campaigns we just read about in that 2 Samuel chapter 8 and 1 Chronicles chapter 18 catalog of military victories. Verse number 9, who will bring me to the fortified city? Who will lead me to Edom? Have you not rejected us, O God? You do not go forth, O God, with our armies. O grant us help against the foe, for vain is the salvation of man. With God we shall do valiantly. It is he who will tread down our foes. So that goes back to the idea there was a moment, a period of time, when Israel was suffering because they'd done something wrong. So God was not acting on their behalf. Then comes repentance, and God then gets behind them and goes with them to the battle and gives them salvation, gives them victory, and brings their enemies down. Well, we're going to continue in the book of the Psalms for the next several sessions, so as we move into next week. So if you want to go ahead and read some of them ahead of time, let me quickly give you the places that we're going to go to. We're going to look at Psalm 8, which is an undated Psalm of David, Psalms 19, 20, and 21, Psalm 101, Psalm 103, Psalm 110, Psalm 139, Psalm 144. So those are some of the undated psalms that we will attack, that we'll tackle next week, that may have been written during this period of time. We'll look at Psalm 145, which is an acrostic psalm. I think this is the first of those that we're going to come across. It's where each line starts with a different letter of the Hebrew alphabet. And then, once we've introduced that idea, we'll hit a few more that take on that style. These are not written by David, necessarily, and that would be Psalms 111, 112, and 119. And that's going to take up pretty much all of our next week looking at these various psalms, because Psalm 119 is the longest psalm. It has 22 sections, each section devoted to a specific letter of the Hebrew alphabet. Have a great weekend.